Welcome to Jacksonville.radio. We're a family of radio stations serving the Jacksonville and South Georgia areas. As a service to our community, we highlight organizations and events that help make this area the best place in the country to live. Thank you for listening to our North Florida neighborhood.
Hi, and welcome to North Florida neighborhood. I'm Colby. And North Florida Neighborhood is all about getting to know our neighbors and hearing what really cool stuff they're doing with us and for us. And this neighbor is a little different because she's doing things for her best friends, which are our pets and pets that no longer have a home. Elaine West, the founder of Rooterville Animal Sanctuary, thank you so much for joining us.
Hey, Colby, it's good to be with you. Thank you for having me.
I'm so excited. But first, will you just kind of unravel who Rooterville Animal Sanctuary is?
So Rooterville is home to about 300 animals. They're mostly farm animals and primarily pigs of all different types. And we're open to the public on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday from 10 a.m. till 3 p.m., so we love visitors. And, just for people to come out, meet the animals, have the experience of a lifetime with them, because you don't get to actually touch animals when you go places hardly. So this is a really awesome place. We love to have visitors to share our animals.
Okay, so 300 animals, that's a lot. Mm-hmm. And then it's not just like little chickens running around, but like big animals, like fat pigs. So why do you have all of these?
Well, there is a huge need, and we can't even fill the need for farm animals because nobody will really help them, and it's really sad because most places see them as food, so they don't end up at, like, shelters and get humanely euthanized if nobody wants to take them to be a pet. So there's just so many. I probably get 10 calls a week from people wanting me to take their pet pigs or stray pigs. Or chickens, roosters, I get a lot of calls for those. So that's why, you know, we have as many as we can handle, and right now that number's about 300.
Say I have a pet pig, and just out of nowhere, mm-hmm. I don't want it anymore. They call you, and then you come and get it?
Nope, not anymore. They call me, and I have to say I'm sorry, but I can't help you. So, and every sanctuary that helps rescued pigs is full. So you're pretty much on your own if you decide that you no longer want or no longer can care for your pet pig. It's really sad.
So I didn't know having a pet pig was that common, that it's kind of caused all these pigs not to have homes anymore.
Oh, yeah.
What sparked that?
So people see all these cute little videos online of these little teensy little pigs, and they see them in the house, and they're really portrayed in a way that is not normal or not what the pigs really are. And so people get these adorable little teeny tiny baby pigs that are really cute and easy to manage, and then they grow up and then they don't want them anymore and they can't deal with them. And when they're taken from their mom too young, they get really aggressive when they get to be about a year old. So then people can't deal with that. It's just pigs really don't make good pets for most people. So we certainly don't encourage people to have them as pets because they're really just for a special few people. They are not like a dog or a cat at all.
And then this is where Rooterville comes along. And unfortunately, you're kind of running out of space right now is what you were saying.
Yeah.
But y'all have taken so many animals. And do you just let them run around? Do you let them inside?
Yeah.
What's it look like for y'all there?
So we let them live out their natural lives, which is, you know, up to 20 years for a potbelly pig and 15 years for a farm pig. So we just let them live out their natural lives, and they're not, we don't believe in keeping things caged up, so they're free roaming here. We have the pigs that are really friendly that are easy to feed in our front yard of the house, the farmhouse, for people to feed them snacks. But most of them are just wandering free on our almost 30 acres of property.
And what other animals do you have? Like, do they all get along?
Yeah, we have cows and goats. We have two cows and two goats. Now, they're in a pasture of their own because the cows are so big, I don't want them to trample on a pig by accident. They wouldn't do anything out of meanness, but they do like to play, and they get a little frisky, and pigs kind of move slow. But yeah, so the cows and the goats, and then we have dogs and cats, of course, and chickens and some turkeys. There's something I'm forgetting. Dogs, cats, turkeys, goats, chickens. We have Admiral Fluffy Boots, our little rooster who came from Jacksonville, and people can hold him. He loves to be held. He's such a cuddle bug. I feel like I'm missing something, but that's all that's coming to mind.
This is a lot of animals. Like, I don't even have a dog, and I can't imagine taking care of one. So this has got to be a lot of work on you and your staff.
It's a tremendous amount of work and expense, and that's why we can't do more than we're doing right now, because we just simply cannot afford it. And this year's been really hard because of COVID. Last year we had about 8,000 visitors to our sanctuary, and this year we haven't even cracked 1,000 yet.
Oh,
so it's been a really hard year for us. But yeah, it's just money. If I could win the lottery, we could do a lot more, but that hasn't happened yet, so we're limited in what we can do because of the money and the room.
Well, Rooterville is open right now for us to come and hang out, right?
Yeah.
And
we
how
love
much
visitors.
How much does it cost to come and feed the pigs and hold your rooster?
Well, it's a suggested donation of $10 per person, $30 for a family of four. If you give more, that's great. If you can't afford to give that, then we still want you to come. So we're pretty easy to get along with. And we do have a gift shop. It's not open right now. We're getting a bigger gift shop. So that's coming. And, yeah, we're having a big yard barn sale because we are going to be moving. We're looking for property closer to Jacksonville. If anybody knows of anything, we'd like at least 10 acres closer, more convenient to Jacksonville on a paved road. Yeah, so the visitors can come, and we have treat bags for sale for the animals if they forget to buy some treats, so they can feed some animals and hold Admiral Fluffy Boots and get a picture.
Elaine, you said y'all are kind of in the process of looking for new property. Where are y'all at
yes.
right now?
So we're in Melrose, which is about an hour from Jacksonville. We're very close to Keystone Heights. So you just take Blanding and down into Keystone Heights to 100, and then we're about 8 miles from that intersection. So we're right just about in between Gainesville and Jacksonville.
And how long are y'all open for? Like, what are your typical weekly hours?
Well, we're only open Friday, Saturday, and Sunday from 10 to 3, and we do have a person who does tours. The tours are at 11 and 1, and you're welcome to hop in on a tour if you like, but otherwise you can just come and do a self-guided walk around and meet the animal.
I love that you get to meet them. Do they have names, too?
Absolutely. Most of them have names, and they know their name, too.
Like, if I call Roberta over, and she'll come?
Yes, she absolutely will. She may not come, but she'll definitely perk up and look and see what you're wanting from her. So
now, there's so many nonprofits out there, and there are several animal sanctuaries. So what sets Rooterville apart from all these other ones?
So I think the biggest thing that makes us different is that we are open to the public, that, you know, the public can come in. We don't have any things that are hidden. We don't have a back room where people can't see what's going on. You can come and you can see everything that's happening here. We welcome volunteers, so we're very transparent and open to the public. And I think, you know, the world-class care that we give the animals, we treat them like they're our friends and not like they're something that's subservient to us. I think the attitude that we have towards the animals, it just gives it a whole different feeling here.
Just a lot more respect, like kind of on the same level.
Yeah, and the animals respond differently to people. It's just really kind of magical. People will say that it's magical and amazing. I hear all these words that they use to describe their experience here and how they feel about it. But it's a very peaceful, tranquil, park-like setting, and the animals are free to be who they want to be, and they're used to interacting with people. So they're very, it's just a really special place.
Well, do you guys offer volunteer opportunities for other people to kind of serve in this special place?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. We love volunteers, and we welcome volunteers who just want to come and spend, you know, maybe an hour, a couple hours, whatever. If you can't do physical work, if you could just come and rub pig bellies all day long, that would be fine. So we aren't real picky about what a volunteer is capable of doing, but the more that you want to be involved, the more we'll let you get involved. So, for instance, if you want to come every week and you want to be involved in feeding the animals, then we would love that, and we would train you to do that kind of thing.
So
it's just up to you what you want to do and how involved you want to be and how often you want to come.
Yeah, such a cool opportunity. And we talked about mm-hmm. it a little bit. You guys do take donations of monetary value. Mm-hmm. But what if we have, for some reason, extra pig food or extra food for your other animals? Do you guys accept that also?
Oh, yeah. Now, our dogs are, they eat a vegan dog food. So we don't really need anything for the dogs. The cats, they eat a special diet, too, because our cats are mostly older animals. But the pigs, yes, bags of pig feed, hay. We always need hay, especially with winter coming. We're going to bed the pigs down with hay. And then we buy trailer loads of peanut hay. I think we had a fundraiser up to raise money for that. That costs about $6,000 for 3 or 4 months of peanut hay for the animals.
Whoa.
But, yeah, I think we have a wish list on Amazon, and I wish Tractor Supply would do a wish list. But bedding, right now we could use blankets because winter is upon us. We cover the piggies up with blankets at night. So, yeah, just about anything. And, oh, and we have we sell things online. You know, we have an eBay store and stuff. So if you have some nice things that you aren't using, we'd love to take those and put them on eBay and sell them. Yeah, we'd love to help, any kind of help.
Yeah, so many different opportunities to, whether it's come hang out with the pigs and the other animals or just get your hands dirty, scrubbing their bellies and hanging out. Well, Elaine, tell us again how we can come visit y'all and a good website to get linked up with you guys.
Okay, sure. So we have all the social media, Instagram, Facebook, all that, and that's Rooterville Animal Sanctuary. And then our website is www.rooterville, and that's R-O-O-T as in Tom, E-R, V as in Victor, I-L-L-E .O-R-G. And then social media, and then I forgot what else you asked me.
No.
Maybe I'm sorry.
No, that's okay. That's plenty. Thank you so much for being such a great neighbor in our neighborhood, not only to us, but to the animals that we care so much about.
Awesome. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for listening to Our North Florida Neighborhood. Listen again next week. And if you have an event or organization you'd like highlighted, please contact Colby King at Colby, C-O-L-B-I, at Jacksonville.radio. Welcome to Jacksonville.radio. We're a family of radio stations serving the Jacksonville and South Georgia areas. As a service to our community, we highlight organizations and events that help make this area the best place in the country to live. Thank you for listening to Our North Florida Neighborhood.
Hey, and welcome to North Florida Neighborhood. I'm Colby, and North Florida Neighborhood is all about getting to know our neighbors and hearing what really cool stuff they're doing with us and for us in the community. And today, the neighbor we get to chat with is Amanda Napolitano. She's the executive director for the Donna Foundation. Amanda, thank you so much for joining us.
I am super stoked to be back on the show with you, Colby. Thank you for having me.
Well, it's really cool because we got to chat back in October, and I know we talked around this time last year, but for those of us who are just kind of new to the name Donna, give us a rundown on what the Donna Foundation is all about.
You bet. So the Donna Foundation really is all about transforming the experience for breast cancer patients and their families from something that's full of fear and frustration to something that's full of love and support. So we're here for those people and their families, for those patients and their families. And, you know, we do that in three ways, Colby. We do that by funding some breast cancer research at Mayo Clinic so that we have a hope for the future. We do that through our Donna Care Line, which is a care line where patients or their family members can call in, and our team will help them with the financial complications that are presented with a breast cancer diagnosis so that nobody has to choose between putting food on the table and paying their bills and going and getting medical treatment. So, and then the third way is through the celebration of survivorship and education and awareness around the topic of breast cancer. And we are the producer of the only national marathon to finish breast cancer right here on the First Coast every year in February.
And that's what we want to chat about. Like, the Donna Foundation obviously does so many great things. And with that, they need our financial support and even our emotional support. So, Amanda, what can we expect out of this marathon? Because it's unlike one y'all have ever done before, because this is kind of going into a year, coming out of one, unlike ever before.
That's right. We'll use all of the buzzwords for 2020 and now going into 2021, right?
Yeah, right.
The proverbial pivot, the unprecedented, you know, all of those things. And clearly, you know, it's not something to really joke about, but out of, you know, an overabundance of caution and because, you know, obviously we support a patient population that, you know, that is a little more susceptible to things like coronavirus. We have decided that all of our events through the spring of 2021 of this year will be virtual. So this will be the first ever national marathon to finish breast cancer that will be conducted virtually. So we're calling on people all over the country to run Donna in their own neighborhoods. So we're still going to come together and finish breast cancer. We're just going to do it in our own neighborhoods.
So in my mind, this is what a virtual marathon looks like to me. Me signing up because I want a medal, and then I log in these mile times that are so incredible, not true at all. And then I get the medal and I can say I've run a marathon. So that's just what's going on in my mind as someone who does not run at all. So what's the reality of how this virtual marathon works? Like, this is so foreign to me, and I'm sure a lot of other people.
Well, we can simplify it in really two ways.
Thank
right?
you.
So you're running four times, or you're running overtime, and that is what is truly remarkable and fun about a virtual race of any distance. And oh, by the way, we have 5Ks, which are 3 miles. We have a half marathon, which is 13.1 miles. And of course, the marathon at 26.2 miles. We even have an ultra marathon, which is 110 miles.
Oh my gosh!
And you're going to have your runners that you know that really competitive, that want to submit an official time. They want to compete with other people. And thanks to wonderful technologies that we have, we're able to orchestrate that. So this is the four time option. So option one, four time between February the 6th and February the 14th. You go out and you run the race that you've registered for all at once, four times. And we've got some technology through our app where you just press a button, go, you run the miles, and it automatically knows when you've gone the distance, submit your time to us, and you're done. And we have your time, and we're going to be publishing results on Monday, February the 15th, celebrating our overall winners, still doing age group awards and all of those things. So very traditional road race. It's just, you're going out your front door instead of coming to the Beaches Town Center and running with, you know, thousands of your friends. And then option two is overtime. So, you know, you've got four time and then overtime. And this really has opened the door to really some exciting opportunities for people that say, well, I could never run a marathon.
Me.
Well, guess what? This year you can, because you can register and then decide, okay, the marathon is 26 miles. I'm going to do that over the course of February and March of this year and spread those miles out over however many days that you need and, you know, go out and walk a mile every day. And over time, you'll accumulate 26.2 miles and earn that medal that we will get to you. No time submission is required, no logging of a mile and reporting it to us. It really is just a celebration of survivorship on your own and knowing that you're doing a wonderful thing to finish breast cancer and earning your very own marathon medal.
And Amanda, both of those options, they can be either for the full marathon, the half marathon, the 5K, all these options, right?
Correct. So what I'm getting to do this year, which is really rare, right? So I'm usually standing
front and center
line, you know, conducting an event, right?
Mm-hmm.
So so this year, Amanda gets to run along with everyone else. My plan, and I've already started, I am running the 110, so that's the Donna Ultra. I started January 1st, and I will run 110 miles over the month of January, just going out and running, you know, a couple miles every day. And then for actual marathon weekend or for the window of February the 6th through the 14th, I'm going to run the 5K one day, and I'm going to run the half marathon another day so that I qualify for the booby trap challenge. So at the end of the day, I will have the ultra medal, which is also a ridiculously cool belt buckle.
Oh, my gosh.
I know.
This is seriously so cool.
Yeah. The 5K medal, the half marathon medal, and then the booby trap challenge medal. Wait. So I will be blamed out by the end of this thing.
Wait, so what's the booby trap challenge?
So So the booby trap challenge is jumping into both the 5K event as well as the half marathon or the full marathon.
Okay, and I'm just thinking, like, wow, you're really taking it and running, literally and figuratively, mm-hmm. because come January, a lot of us are kind of in that new year, new me mindset where we want to lose weight, we want to do something we've never done before. And for a lot of people, it might be just doing a 5K or doing something crazy like the 110-mile marathon, or not marathon, but you know what I mean. So
I do.
So when do we need to register? When is this happening, and how can we get involved?
You bet. So registration is open, and will be open until Sunday, February the 14th. So that very last day that you can submit a time to us is the last day that online registration will be open. But I want to bring to the attention of everybody that January the 22nd is a date to put on your calendar. That's the last day to register where you can take advantage of free packet pickup at either Donna headquarters or First Place Sports locations all over town. It is the last day that if you want to opt to have your materials mailed to you, so your shirt, your medal, your goodie bag, we've got neck gaiters that have, 26.2 finisher on them, whatever the designated race you're running, they're super cool. If you want to receive those in advance of marathon weekend, then the last day to register would be the 22nd of January. It's also the last day of the registration fees. Prices go up on the 23rd. So let's get everybody in on January the 22nd. That way you have all of their stuff, all of our stuff, when you roll out the door to run your event.
Well, Amanda, for me, I kind of said it jokingly, but I'm one of those people that has always said I am unable to run a marathon. I had spinal surgery several years ago, and I can't do that. But this is an opportunity where people like me and so many others who've always had it, no, that's not something I can do at all. We really can. You guys made it as simple as possible, but still allowing us to boast, hey, I did a marathon. I have the medal to prove it.
That's right. The medal to prove it. And you're also really doing something special and great for someone else. I was reminded yesterday of the really importance of our message of love over fear, and especially right now, to really consciously choose love. And this is a great way to do that. You're choosing love because you're doing something good for your body. You're choosing love because you're doing something good for breast cancer patients and their families. And you're just doing something fun. And I think we could all use some fun right now.
Yeah, and I mean, I've heard about the Donna Marathon just from having friends who've competed in it and then even chatting with you. But today was truly the first time where it registered when you said no more fear and frustration, just love and support.
You bet. That's what we're all about.
So what if we're not running or we're not really ready for that yet, how can we still show support for you and for all these survivors?
So that window of time I was mentioning earlier, the February the 6th through the 14th, this is when we're going to be calling on the whole community of Jacksonville to turn up the pink. People are going to be running in every neighborhood all over town, not just at the beach. So, we are a 26.2-mile beach block party on a normal year.
Yeah.
Well, guess what? All of Jacksonville and, frankly, all over the United States are going to be a 26.2-mile block party for Donna runners this year. So really, decorate your yard. Put a sign out encouraging everyone. We've got the Acosta Bridge that's going to go pink. Laura Street's going to go pink. Daly's Place is going to go pink. So, this city needs to turn up the pink and celebrate those runners that are going out and doing the run on their own.
Such a cool way to support. And Amanda, tell us again how we can get registered and those dates that we need to put in our calendar so we can be ready.
You bet. So register at breastcancermarathon.com. Best to register before January the 22nd and to ensure your medal and everything gets to you before you go on your run, because you're going to want, your friend or spouse or loved one to put that medal on your neck when you're done, right? And then February the 6th through the 14th is when we'll all be running Donna.
Well, I'm so excited for this. I'm used to passing out waters and popsicles and all that fun stuff. So I'm excited to just be a part of this and pinking out my yard either way, even if no one runs by. So thank you so much, Amanda, for being such a great neighbor in our neighborhood.
Thank you, Colby. I appreciate it.
Thank you for listening to Our North Florida Neighborhood. Listen again next week, and if you have an event or organization you'd like highlighted, please contact Colby King at Colby, C-O-L-B-I, at jacksonville.radio.
Car stereos are the perfect gift. Hoffman's Car Stereo has served Clay and surrounding counties for years with name brand car stereos. Hoffman's can sell all makes and models. If they sell a radio, they'll install it for free. Hoffman's Car Stereo is locally owned and operated, so you deal direct with the owners. Hoffman's Car Stereo, for car stereo accessories and video. 1232 Blanding Boulevard, Orange Park South. Call 375-9018. 375-9018.
Does learning a language feel like this?
No habla español?
Hablo.
It's hablo?
Yes.
It's hablo.
Bom dia, like good day, good morning, I think.
I can say, je m'appelle David, but that's probably it.
When you learn a language, you want to actually use it. Babbel is designed with that goal in mind.
This year is my year to get fluent in Spanish, and Babbel is definitely gonna help me do that. The app is so easy to use, and it's so practical. It helps you learn things that you will actually need.
Since my husband is from Guatemala, I'll apply what I've learned in Babbel to our real life situations.
I've tried other language learning apps and nothing really stuck. Babbel's been a complete game changer for me.
Hoy es miércoles y el clima está muy bueno afuera.
Estoy con fome. Yo no tomé café de mañana.
Je suis des États-Unis et du Vientu.
Babbel, language for life, celebrating 10 million subscriptions sold. Now try Babbel for free at babbel.com. Just go to babbel.com and start learning a new language today. That's babbel.com, B-A-B-B-E-L.com.
By texting 64,000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Warby Parker. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at warbyparker.com/terms.
Have you ever wondered why eyeglasses cost so much? Glasses have been around 700 years. Isn't technology supposed to get less expensive over time? Well, there's a simple explanation. For decades, the eyewear industry has been dominated by a single company that's kept prices artificially high while reaping huge profits.
Yikes.
Warby Parker was created to change that. They design and produce their own eyewear and then sell it directly to you for a fraction of the price. Warby Parker's high-quality glasses start at just $95, including your prescription. And if you need an updated prescription, they've got a few easy ways to help you get one. Text HOME to 64,000 to try 5 pairs of frames for free. They'll ship them to you to try out for 5 days. If you find a style you like, they'll send you a fresh pair with your prescription. Easy. Text HOME to 64,000 to pick your 5 frames to try in at home for free. Text HOME to 64,000 to get started for free. That's HOME to 64,000.
On the battlefield, there's a saying America's military men and women live by. Never leave a fallen warrior behind, ever. Off the battlefield, Wounded Warrior Project operates with the same goal. We leave no warrior behind. Wounded Warrior Project is a nonprofit organization created to help our men and women returning home with the scars of war. Whether those scars are physical or mental, we're here to make sure that they heal. And whether it's helping those with post-traumatic stress disorder live a normal life again, or giving much-needed support to injured warriors and veterans hospitals. Because no one deserves our help more than the men and women who risk their lives to keep us safe. Wounded Warrior Project. We never leave a fallen warrior behind. Ever. Learn more about what we do at WoundedWarriorProject.org.
Welcome to Jacksonville.radio. We're a family of radio stations serving the Jacksonville and South Georgia areas. As a service to our community, we highlight organizations and events that help make this area the best place in the country to live. Thank you for listening to our North Florida neighborhood.
Hey, and welcome to North Florida Neighborhood. I'm Colby, and North Florida Neighborhood is all about getting to know our neighbors and seeing what they're doing with us and for us, and more so during a time where we are in a global pandemic and a global crisis. And today, we get the privilege of chatting with Sarah Hill, the Director of Partnership and Programs with Feeding Northeast Florida. Sarah, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah, I love learning about these new organizations, but Feeding Northeast Florida, like, y'all didn't just sprout out of nowhere. Y'all have been around for quite a while, right?
We have. Our organization started back in 2014 after the former food bank, Second Harvest, had to close. So we've been doing this for about 6 years now and have really been focusing in, especially now with COVID, on making sure that all of our community members throughout the counties that we serve have the food access that they need to put food on their table.
So, Sarah, kind of give me some background info on who Feeding Northeast Florida is.
So Feeding Northeast Florida is a food bank that's affiliated with Feeding America that serves 8 counties in Northeast Florida. So we're based out of Duval County, where the majority of the clients that we serve live. Most of the families who need help live in Duval County, but there's hunger all across our county. So we work in 8 of those counties to make sure that there's enough high-quality, healthy food going into those counties for the families who sometimes have some gaps. So about 60% of the families that we work with are working. They have full-time or part-time jobs, but they just can't make their paycheck stretch long enough to reliably provide food for their family. So we work with them to help fill those gaps, to get them the food that they need so that they don't have to skip meals in order to make it.
It's incredible when you, I mean, it's right there in the title. It says Feeding Northeast Florida. And in my mind, like, feeding Jacksonville is a lot to comprehend, but y'all are serving 8 counties.
It is. It is. We have, in our community, there's about 309,000 people who are considered food insecure, which is a little bit different than being hungry. Food insecure means that you aren't necessarily skipping all your meals. You're not starving. But you do have these gaps where you have to eat low-quality food or you have to skip a meal or two to get through. So sometimes that looks like parents who feed their children first and oftentimes just eat whatever is left over so that their kids can eat. And those are the kind of situations where we try to step in and make sure that there's enough food for the whole family.
It's just so emotional because you don't – just that sacrificial love for these parents to – go without a meal so that their kids can have it. But you guys are coming in and saying, no, we have plenty and abundantly more for your entire family.
Yes, it's amazing, actually. There is enough food in our counties to serve everyone who's hungry. The challenge is to get that food to the families who need it. So ultimately, Feeding Northeast Florida is just a giant logistics company. We are a warehouse. We have trucks and drivers and giant walk-in refrigerators and forklifts, and it's funny that that is the solution to solving food insecurity for those families. It's all about logistics.
Yeah, so how the challenge is to get the food, and I mean, you have all these gadgets and gadgets like you just named, and I mean, we can even hear them in the background, but how do you do it?
So we have partnerships with local organizations that have food, so grocery stores, distribution centers, manufacturers, farms. We maintain those relationships with local people who have food. They donate whatever is excess. So that can be like at the grocery store, a can that maybe somebody dropped and is dented, but the food inside is still fine. Sometimes it can be farms that have beautiful produce, but when they planted the produce, they thought they'd make a profit. And now that it's come time to harvest it, it's actually cheaper for them to just go over the perfectly good food. So we have volunteers that go in and help glean those items from the field so that they can be taken to families who are in need. So we have partnerships with people who have food. The food comes back to our warehouse, and we have an army of volunteers that help us sort through the food to make sure that it's fresh and safe to be consumed. And then we work with community partners to actually distribute the food. So we have over 300 partners in our 8-county service area that are rooted in their communities, and they know who the people are that need a little bit of help. And so they host food pantries and soup kitchens. They have residential programs. They work with kids after school. They work with seniors, and they help get food to the people in their community that need it.
Okay, I'm glad you kind of explained it. Like, you guys are almost the head of the operation, and you have all these moving parts that help with the body when it comes to distributing, gathering, putting it in the refrigerator.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. And that's a big part of it, too, is refrigeration, because so much of the food that we get donated, about 70%, has to be refrigerated. It's either fresh produce or it's dairy items or cheese, and those things require refrigeration. So we have to have massive refrigerated storage facilities, as well as refrigerated trucks, so that we make sure to get that food to people at the right temperature so that it won't make them sick.
And I like how you said this is, or I don't know if you said it or not, but you're definitely implying this is quality food. This isn't just things that have expired and we're taking it off the shelves, but good food that nobody's buying.
Yes, yes. Almost 50% is just straight produce. So it is local, you know, cabbage and potatoes that come from a farm down near Hastings. We also share produce with other food banks in the Feeding America network. So, you know, when we have a ton of cabbage on hand, we'll trade with a food bank in Washington and get a whole bunch of apples. So it's really high quality food that we're trying to put into the community, because we know if we're really trying to move the needle on food insecurity and health, we have to do that with healthy food. You can't just do that with, you know, Cheez-Its and donuts.
And it's encouraging that it's not just somebody's sloppy leftovers, because I can only imagine how difficult and even humbling it is to come and ask for food, but then to be given something that's like less than would hurt even more. But y'all are literally, again, giving the best of the best.
Yeah, that's so true. I have so many families that come up to me at distributions and are fighting back tears because they never thought that they would have to be in line to receive food assistance. And when they see that a lot of our distributions are set up to where they can actually go and shop for the food that they need, so they aren't just given a pre-packed bag of food, they can actually choose between broccoli and cabbage. It raises their spirits and provides an amount of dignity that a lot of people don't expect from, you know, a food distribution.
I love that you use that word dignity. And exactly what you just debunked was, I thought you kind of drive up, you get handed a big Kroger bag, you know, and then you drive away. So walk me through the process, Sarah, of what it looks like to get fed.
So the process has changed a little bit through COVID, and we have had to do a bit more pre-packing than we generally like to, just to keep our volunteers and our clients safe. But for the most part, our distributions, we either have things arranged on shelves, just like a grocery store, or set out on tables in categories. And our clients can actually go through and choose items from each table. So, for example, we'll have, you know, all the produce on assembled in one section, and we'll tell clients as they come in that they can choose three items from this section. So that could mean that they get three big bags of potatoes and they, you know, make potato salad for weeks, or they can get some potatoes and some broccoli and some apples, and they can spread it out through the week. So they're able to choose the items that they know that they will eat and that their families will enjoy, and they can also make choices based on their dietary restrictions or allergies as well. Because the last thing we want to do is give someone food that they can't or won't eat.
Because then it just goes to waste.
Exactly. And that's the whole point, is we're trying to avoid waste. We're taking excess food and connecting it to people who are hungry. And if we have waste in that process, we're spinning our wheels for nothing.
So I thought it was really interesting when you started off saying 60% of these families are working and they just don't have enough money. They can't do it. So I get that Feeding Northeast Florida is here to truly feed people, but what is the end goal? Is it to try and lessen that number to say 50% or maybe 40%?
So our end goal really, and the reason why we sometimes use the word food insecurity instead of hunger, is that if I feed you, you're going to be hungry later today. But if I get you to a point where you're no longer food insecure and you have food security, then that means that you're going to be hungry because dinner time is rolling around. But you are going to have the basis and the foundation of food security. So you're going to know, I have food when my next meal comes around. I have food for next week. I have food for my kids for lunch tomorrow. And so that's really what we're trying to get at, is making sure that people know that they have a reliable access to food. Because that gets rid of so much anxiety that these families face. And if we're able to provide food for these families, then they can focus the limited budget that they do have on other life necessities like rent and mortgage and gas and transportation and medicine. So many seniors come to us and say, you know, I've been having to ration my medication because I can't afford medication and food. And that to me is completely unacceptable because there's so much food available. We just have to get it to the people who need it.
Right. Like that shouldn't even be an option. And it sounds like you guys are coming in and taking on the form of being these families constant. Y'all are consistent with your actions and what you're providing for them.
Yes. And you asked earlier about a number. So we have, as part of Feeding America, we are so grateful to have access to a whole team of data analysts and researchers. And so we have a number that we have to hit to know, or we have a number that's called the meal gap. So it's basically the number of meals that's needed to serve everyone who is food insecure. And in the 8 counties that we serve, including the huge bump in food insecurity because of COVID, our number is about 62 million pounds of food. So that's the number that we are always striving for. That's the goal. If we get to where we're distributing 62 million pounds of food a year, then that means that everybody who's food insecure should have access to the food that they need. And that's a big goal. We are not there yet. Our goal for this year, where we think we're going to be our anticipated number, is somewhere around 30 million pounds of food. So we're not even to half of that goal. But the food that we need is available. So when the community rises to support our mission and can help us with things like trucks and drivers and the electricity to keep our refrigerators running, then we can make progress towards that 62 million pound goal.
Again, I get the privilege of chatting with Sarah Hill. She's the Director of Partnership and Programs with Feeding Northeast Florida. And Sarah, I want to jump back to what you just said when the community rises to help y'all meet that goal. And you guys have a partner that really helped you guys rise most recently. Can you kind of tell me about this incredible donation Feeding Northeast Florida just received?
Sure. So we have a lot of amazing partners that help us in this work. Public Supermarket Charity is being one, Southeastern Grocers, Calford Chop House. And just yesterday we received a donation, 10,000 pounds of bread and 10,000 pounds of protein, two things that we are always looking for, from Bimbo Bakeries, Tyson, and Walmart. So it's donations like that and individual donations from members of the community that really keeps our mission moving forward and puts food on the tables of people in our community.
These are big organizations like Tyson, Walmart. That's a household name.
Yes. It's amazing how many companies understand the need for food. And it's wonderful to see companies that work in the food industry understand that that hunger exists, even though they are distributing food themselves. And so they support their local food banks and Feeding America nationally. And we are so incredibly grateful for this partnership because we truly could not do it without them.
These companies are beginning to kind of understand the problem that Northeast Florida is facing. So what can we as members of the community who don't own restaurants and have access to Walmart's leftovers do for y'all?
So there's a lot of ways people in the community can get involved. We have lots of volunteer opportunities. So you can come to the food bank, you can help us sort food, you can volunteer at food distributions to actually hand food out in the community. You can also start a food pantry in your community. So if you live in an area where there's not food pantries that already exist, give me a call and we'll help you set up a food pantry so that you can distribute food. You can also donate. So the food bank runs primarily on individual donations. So if you haven't been affected by COVID and you have some extra money and you're looking for a place to make sure that it's going to a worthy cause, we would gladly accept those gifts. You can also advocate for hunger. So many times in our community, people don't know about the issue of hunger and food insecurity. And so you can take some of the information that I gave today and tell your friends and family and lawmakers about hunger and food insecurity. And that can go a long way to getting some of these policies changed so that we can continue to do the work that we do.
There's so many options other than just writing a check, which of course is totally going to be appreciated and welcomed with open arms, but just down to letting other people know what's going on and kind of helping others be aware. And I also want to talk about this partnership you have with Publix, because they kind of kicked things in gear for y'all recently with another great donation.
Yes, Publix recently donated $125,000 to the food bank to support our mission and COVID relief efforts. So when COVID hit, just like everyone, we didn't really know what to expect. We didn't know how this was going to affect the need for food. And the need post-COVID just skyrocketed because so many people were unemployed. They were home during the shutdown. They couldn't work. And they were already right on the edge of needing food assistance. They were making it work pre-COVID, but after COVID hit, there was just no way. So some of our pantries have reported seeing 3 and 4 times the number of people coming to their locations since COVID, because there's just nowhere else for them to turn. And so donations like the one from Publix and the ones that we get from lots of other donors in our community are essential to making sure that we can buy food when it's not available to be donated, so that we can feed the families who are showing up to these food distributions.
Yeah, I was going to ask, like, this is a ton of money. So what does it go towards? Does it go towards keeping the refrigerators running and paying for other things that y'all have expense-wise, or does it truly go to buying food that you can then give out?
Most of it will go to food purchases. During normal times, we get so many food donations that we don't have to purchase a lot of food. Probably about 20% of the food that we distribute has to be purchased. But because of COVID, the food distribution process, the food supply chain, has been disrupted, and so there's fewer items to be donated to the food bank. So we've had to supplement that with purchased food. So if you look around our warehouse now, about 60% of what you'll see in the warehouse, we've actually had to buy with donations that come in from places like Publix. But then we also have trucks in our fleet that we have to keep on the roads, which requires gas and maintenance, and we have to run the refrigerated units on them, which is also expensive. So donations also go to keep the trucks on the road so we can get the food where it needs to go.
And did you see this coming? Like, did you know that Publix was going to kind of jump in and help y'all so much?
So we partner with Publix all the time on all different levels of food insecurity. And so we know that Publix is a reliable partner, but this donation was, we didn't know the number that was coming on this check. And so we were so excited to receive this and so grateful that they understand the weight of what we're facing and are willing to, you know, stand up and help us in this fight.
And I think it speaks even in a higher volume when we hear that Feeding Northeast Florida is going to use this money and pour it right back into the community.
Yeah.
Well, this has been so incredible. And Sarah, just tell me again how we can kind of get on board and serve or help y'all in any way.
The best ways I can give you are to get involved. So volunteer, advocate, write letters, tell people in your community about food insecurity and look for ways to help. And then obviously we will always accept monetary donations to help keep this important work going.
And Sarah, what's a good website where we can learn more about Feeding Northeast Florida?
So you can learn more about Feeding Northeast Florida at our website. It's feedingnesl.org. You can also learn more about food insecurity on a nationwide level and more county-specific information at Feeding America's website, which is feedingamerica.org.
Well, great. Sarah, thank you so much for being such a great neighbor in our neighborhood.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for listening to Our North Florida Neighborhood.
Listen again next week. And if you have an event or organization you'd like highlighted, please contact Colby King at Colby, C-O-L-B-I, at jacksonville.radio.